Hi, everyone, and welcome to On The Box, the Geek Show's dedicated television podcast. We're here today with me, Rob, and we have over here the extremely tired Andrew.
I know, I wanted to see how long I could not say my name until you would just give up and say it for me.
It was like that weird thing from Banzai, you know, the woman with the microphone who starts interviewing people. She asks them a question and then just stands there and lets them talk.
Yeah, exactly that kind of thing.
Yes. And over here, spotting a new Apple Watch, well, we have Andy.
It's not on my wrist at the minute. It's charging.
You keep stroking it, yes, and hugging it and and loving it and polishing it and going, my precious.
I was also quite fond of the watch as well.
Oh, God.
Yes. Anyway, yes. How is everyone today?
I'm good.
As you said, very tired.
You've had an exam this morning.
I have had an exam this morning. It did not go well.
You never know.
No, I definitely know.
What was it in shorthand, was it?
Yeah, shorthand.
What's the shorthand for didn't go well?
It's like line, N-T, G, upwards flick, big dip, L.
It sounds like weird acrobatics moves.
I almost thought
you know, like a gymnastics routine. Upwards flick, big dip.
Or shorthand. I always thought shorthand was something to do with tennis. Isn't it?
I've missed this level of humour.
Backhand, shorthand, forehand. Left hand, right hand. So, again, in tennis then, does that mean that it's, is it like a tennis grip or is it just like a really short shot that doesn't quite make it over the net? Is that shorthand?
I think it's just when you have like tiny baby hands and you're trying to play tennis.
Possibly, yeah. Okay, anyway, we've got news.
Shorthand is where you have to grip the racket with both hands because your hands are so small they can't fit around the racket.
Smaller racket.
Thanks for that, Andy. No, I'm glad you pointed that out. That's great.
Okay, right. We do have news, so let's get off the tennis talk and move on to other things. Starting off with, who wants to go?
I can go first.
Okay.
So, first up, we have the news that BBC America are going to be bringing back, well, I guess it's not a TV series, it was a series of TV movies that they're now turning into a TV series.
Yeah.
It's only bloody Quatermass.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. I'm happy about this. Right. BBC did a series called Doomwatch from 1970 to 72, and then right after that, they did a TV movie called Doomwatch. Series is actually quite prescient for its time, because it's talking about ecological disasters and global changes in climate and stuff like that. And I said in that review, it's very reminiscent of the old Quatermass movies, and it would be great if they brought back Quatermass, rebooted the whole Quatermass thing. And now it's happening!
It is. I think we don't know, like, barely anything about it. All we do know is the script is going to be written by Jeremy Dyson, who was the writer for The League of Gentlemen.
Ooh, that's going to be interesting.
Yes.
Because League of Gentlemen really did horror quite well.
It was quite bizarre.
It was the most terrifying comedy series I've ever seen.
Yeah. Thing is, one of my favourite Quatermass ones, and the one that generally gets shown a lot, is actually Quatermass in the Pit. That's the one that you generally see on TV. Yeah. And that's the one that most people know. I am curious if they're going to actually redo that. Because I'd love to see an updated version. And who could play Quatermass? Sean Connery.
David Morrissey.
Really?
Yeah, I think he could do it.
Okay. Yeah, I see what you mean. David Morrissey, yeah, is a possibility. I'd say Sean Connery just because he looks the part when you give him a tweed jacket. Because I'm just thinking about him from Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. When he was a professor in that, you just want him to reprise that role, but as Quatermass.
Yeah. Basically, just him as Henry Jones Sr. again.
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
No, Henry Jones Quatermass. Or Henry Quatermass.
No, because Quatermass is the dog.
Yes. Yes, it is. Andy's not following at all now. He's got a bemused expression on his face.
It's a show that I've never really...
Quatermass is kind of a sci-fi horror type thing. It's early British TV, kind of around the same time as the Doctor Who franchise started off, maybe a little bit before, but it was a lot more grounded than Doctor Who is.
It's also cheesy as hell, and I loved it for that.
Yeah, it was.
It wasn't everything at that time, in a sense. Science fiction means bright lights.
Bright lights and wobbly sets. Yes.
Yeah. And an electric monster that... Sorry. I'm just remembering Quatermass in the Pit, and that was just... That monster at the in Quatermass in the Pit was just like, yeah, your special effects budget wasn't that large, was it?
No, it was probably just like a £5 or £20 down like the back of the settee.
Yep. So, I'm happy about this. Quatermass, yes. Quatermass, definitely yes, because I'm bored of Doctor Who, I'll be honest. I kind of lost interest in Doctor Who. Towards the end of the Tennant stuff, I tolerated the Matt Smith stuff. Peter Capaldi's had some good episodes, but I'm just kind of... It's the same thing over and over again now.
Yeah, I like that this would probably be like basically Doctor Who for grown-ups.
Yeah.
I mean, Doctor Who's target audience is kids.
Yeah, I know. Well, the thing is, Torchwood was supposed to be Doctor Who for grown-ups.
Yeah, but they interpreted that as Doctor Who where everyone has sex with everything.
Yeah. And then they did Children of Earth. And if Torchwood had basically been like Children of Earth...
Yeah, because that was Doctor Who for grown-ups.
Yeah. If Torchwood had been Children of Earth all the way through, it would have been one of the most amazing sci-fi series ever to come out of Britain.
But I always thought Torchwood... I mean, I've never been like a fan of Doctor Who. But, like, for example, Torchwood, that was an anagram. So you're never going to get rid of that relation to the show, are you?
Hmm.
It's going to always be linked to that same target audience and that same formula.
Well, I'm just wondering how many parents decide to watch Torchwood with their kids.
And then just immediately cover their eyes.
Yeah, where the kid's going, "Mummy, what's that man doing to that man?"
Well, literally episode one was the alien that sexes people to death.
Yes.
I want to know, how did they come up with a name?
Torchwood.
I know it's an anagram, but is it because of something in the show?
Yeah, it's because of something in the show. Mm. There was
No, it isn't. Because basically
they did that after.
What it was Torchwood would be something they would name the Doctor Who tapes so that they wouldn't get stolen.
Ah, so it was all set off before.
Not just that. There is actually a thing, and it goes back to the time of Queen Victoria.
Yeah, I know, but they put that in afterwards.
Was that in afterwards?
Yeah, that was basically, they put that in as kind of a prequel to introducing Torchwood for the Torchwood series.
Ah, so, okay.
So they didn't hire anybody to sit there and go, "You've got an hour, there's Doctor Who, see what word you can make out of it."
I can make who, I can make doctor, I can make dot. Which is like Dart.
It's got a room for like the country's leading countdown players.
Yes. I can make word.
Wood torch.
I can make hoot.
There's an episode of Countdown, not your torch.
Yes.
You can make talk word, woo.
Yes.
Anyway.
Okay, yeah. Anyway. So. Where were we? Quatermass, yeah.
Quatermass, that's coming back. That's going to be cool.
I'm happy about this. So, yeah. Anyway, moving on to a bit more serious news. You know there's a TV show called The Biggest Loser?
Indeed, there is.
Right, and it's all about people who are overweight or obese and who loses the most weight. And apparently they win a prize, which could be a cookie. Might not be a cookie. I don't know.
Oh, that would be defeating the object. The winner gets the all-you-can-eat buffet at, I don't know.
At Hooters. No, Hooters, because it's the all-American family restaurant.
Which also means, forgetting we have to specify what we're talking about here today, is the American version.
Yeah.
Yes. Not The Biggest Loser UK or The Biggest Loser Australia.
No, this is The Biggest Loser over in America. And they are under investigation from the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department because former contestants of the show have claimed that they were forced to use drugs to lose weight.
See, I can completely believe that.
define drugs. there's quite a serious allegation.
Well, the producers are saying that these are unsubstantiated allegations, and they believe these allegations are without merit and false. The safety and well-being of their contestants has always been paramount. Contestants are told at the start of the show there is zero tolerance for any weight loss drugs. We prohibit the use of any illegal substances, in addition to the many other rules and procedures of the show that are designed to ensure safety.
Okay, well, that's BS, because, I mean, I'm just going off, like, the English version. But on that, they basically make people exercise until they puke every single day.
Yeah.
That's not good for people's health.
No, it's not.
Yeah, but they sign up for it.
Yeah, but here's the thing. When you get right down to it, we don't know what goes on behind the scenes. And when you're making stuff for TV, it's all about the ratings, and nothing gets ratings better than some kind of, you know, rags to riches story, or, you know, fat to thin story.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if somebody can say, last week I was 270 kilograms of fat, and now look at me, I have a beach body.
Yeah, they're not going to go, for example, I snack every day, and this show helped me cut out the fed Mars bar. Something like that, you know. It's true, though, isn't it? Oh, well, I would watch that show.
It is true. How to give up that third Mars bar. So why are you here? I have a Mars bar habit.
what would be really fun, I always get this premise for a show. It's a bit cruel.
It's a bit cruel.
It's like, for example, like, do you know they have these shows, like the shows where they exercise and they lose weight, like, legitimately. They should go, they should send a person into some, like, into the house. And, I don't know, like, put a padlock on the fridge or something like that, you know, and go, for this month, you have to use this fridge, which has all this healthy stuff in it. It's got that swell element to it, so it's not cruel, but...
I have a better solution if you want to tackle obesity. Make the healthy food cheaper than the unhealthy food. Problem solved. Let's put it this way. If you could have a piece of fruit or a bag of crisps... Yeah. And the piece of fruit costs less than the bag of crisps, you're going to have the piece of fruit.
And don't put tax on the drinks, the unhealthy drinks. Make the healthy drinks
cheaper.
Yeah, make them more affordable.
Because everything that's good for you is far too bloody expensive.
Although, you know, I'm not sure that will help, though.
Why?
Because as Lost has taught us... Can put a fat man on an island for years and have him eat nothing but fruit and vegetables.
And he's still fat. Yes. I forgot about Lost.
Gather all these people that think apply for the Biggest Loser and put them on the shore, for example, like Bear Grylls Island.
No, because Bear Grylls the island, that sounds wrong. just go Bear just standing there berating some island. berating island. Just telling island as a landmass that it's wrong and it's not fit for purpose.
We do have to say this as well, we don't mean to offend
Kate, we have to
anybody.
Go back. We have to grill the island.
We have to say we don't want to offend anybody with what we're saying. We're just being hypothetical.
Yeah, Bear grills the island. He's there telling the island to go sit on the naughty step. So, yeah. Anyway, yes.
Well, you
problem with Bear Grylls the island is that I don't think obese people would be able to handle the first hour.
Yeah.
Generally, when they have people on there, they're supposed to be quite fit, and people have actually been injured. You know, sometimes quite badly. On
saw that one.
Yeah,
on
I'm actually surprised.
Fell off a cliff, didn't he, or something?
Like how badly people have been hurt. Because then, with a lot of these things, they go out of their way. To only make it look dangerous.
Mm. You do have training for like probably months before they go onto that show. It's not like you just found some civilians and go, there you go, we're on this island
over there.
Well,
kidnap them off the street. That thing is...
This is getting closer and closer to Battle Royale and I approve.
Thing is, what we need then is celebrity Bear Grylls the island.
Oh, that's also on another story that we're going to go into.
Oh, really?
It's my story.
Go on then.
It's the... Loose men.
Really?
Yes.
What's with loose men?
Loose men.
What about them?
Well, basically what's happened is they've been taking the special drugs that make people get thinner. and never quite lose.
Basically, Peter Andre is...
That was a joke about laxatives, by the way.
Yes.
He's been on a male version of Loose Women recently.
Oh, right. That's what you mean by Loose Men.
And he's mentioned he'd love to do that again as a regular thing.
He'd love to do Loose Men again as a regular thing.
Well, the first line, I'll go through. Pete Andre.
Are you suddenly posh?
Spanish cousin. Pete Andre's Spanish share brother, Peter Andre, has revealed that he would love to do Loose Men again. As long as Craig Revel Harwood was involved.
Oh, there's a Daily Mail headline right there.
He's recently...
Just from that one line, you could see it all over the Daily Mail. Peter Andre comes out of the closet.
But yeah, you've got...
Claims Craig Revel Harwood is one of them.
Yeah, there's Craig Revel Harwood, and the other two that he'd love to do that with is Lee Francis, Keith Lemon.
Yeah.
And Gino DeCampo. Basically, celebrity Jews in the daytime. He's basically said he's done I'm Celebrity before.
Okay.
And he would love to do Bear Grylls the Island.
And that's where the link comes in.
Yes, and that's where the link comes in. So Peter Andre will be your first entrant into this Bear Grylls Celebrity Island, if there ever is one. Which I'll be honest with you.
Peter
I'd
Andre
watch.
Wants to do the island. Is he going to wander around singing Mysterious Girl?
That's how he hunts. He just walks around singing Mysterious Girl and all the birds drop dead from the trees.
Yep.
If it did Celebrity Bear Grylls the Island, this puts I'm a Celebrity. They're going to have to put the risk up for that, aren't they?
No, because the risk is already there. You know why they're hiding in the jungle? Because they're secretly being stalked by Ant and Dec.
Yeah.
The mighty hunters Ant and Dec, armed with their shorthand.
So, who? While we're on the subject of a celebrity island, who would do you think would you like to see on it?
The Kardashians.
Everybody you'd want, just thrown together.
Well, that would be a really short series because they'd just escape on their flotation devices.
It
would be Battle Royale if they hated each other. I'd watch that.
Because Rob Kardashian's getting a series his own. So.
Don't forget, Peter is also currently teaming up with Oikos. Yes, Oikos, the yogurt.
Why do you call the yogurt Oikos?
For their
Oikos!
For their new whip and mix range. The new whip and mix...
Oh, please say that's getting featured on Loose Men.
The new... I'm not finished. The new whip and mix is a creamy mousse, ideal as an indulgent evening snack.
I don't know how to follow that. I don't.
Boris Johnson, I want to be trapped on the island.
It gets even worse as well.
Miley Cyrus.
Apparently, there's also a competition. Well, I'm not going to promote the competition, but you can win a dreamy day with the star.
And his Oikos.
And his Oikos.
As much thick, creamy mousse as you can eat.
Apparently it's a tasty evening snack.
So at the end of the day, the story is there's strong odds that there's going to be a regular show called Loose Men with Peter Andre, possibly Lee Francis, Craig Revel Harwood, and Gino DeCampo.
And a creamy mousse that's a tasty evening snack. Yes. Anyway. Back to the island. Who do we want on the island? Let's decide now. Who do we want on the island? You want Boris Johnson.
I do want Boris.
I've nominated Miley Cyrus. Waiting for you, Andy.
When you said Boris Johnson, I'm thinking, oh, another politician that he hates. David Cameron?
No, I would have gone with George Osborne.
Just get him
out
of
there.
Yeah, I mean,
David Cameron, that's not fair to all the wild boar living on the island.
Shout all the politicians in with Peter Andre and, a few others. Someone really dangerous.
Now, who's that really annoying one who's, the one with the teeth? Janet Street Porter.
Yes.
Put her on the island. She annoys
I'll give
me.
Her a week before she becomes Queen of the Beavers.
You do realise that if she's on the island, the next thing you see, there'll just be this giant set of teeth chomping. You know, like that little wind-up toy. And just a tiny Janet Street porter wandering around just chomping all the scenery.
I think we could shot the Chuckle Brothers in there as well with Piers Morgan.
No, because the Chuckle Brothers are fine. Yeah, you know, Piers Morgan, definitely.
Yes.
Piers Morgan, definitely. He can go across. But the Chuckle Brothers, nah, it's fine.
Oh, come on.
Those two guys who do the 118 adverts, send them over.
I mean, you're telling me when they're building the fire.
Gee, we've gone for double axe, Jedward.
Yes.
Just have a full double axe island.
Oh, and also Keith Lemon. Let's get rid of him.
Yeah, he's not a real person.
Whoever he is, let's just get rid of him. Lee Francis, is it? Whatever his name is? I don't know. I don't care. Just let's go. Let's get rid of him. Let's send him to the Bear Grylls Battle Royal Island.
Actually, speaking of the twin special, I've got it. We have, as you decide, that like only one of them can exist. And so you must escape the island, like, claim your rightful place as the one and only Jedward.
There can be only one. Yes.
This sounds more like the Hunger Games. The Hunger Games.
The Hungry Games. No, I think you'll find that version of the island definitely is the Hungry Games. It's a Mars bar. Let's go to war over the Mars bar.
Probably the third Mars bar that I've saved on the other show.
Exactly. It's been randomly discarded on the island.
Hunt the Mars bar. It's in the middle of the island. Anyway.
There's Boris Johnson just running towards it with a spear and he's wearing nothing but a few leaves. Anyway. Artfully placed.
And we're
Donald Trump, let's put him on there as well.
That story was loose men.
Yes, that was. Anyway, yes, let's move on, let's move on, let's move on. So, what else have we got in the news?
We've got some news that I think you're going to like a lot, Rob.
Ooh.
See, Amazon Prime have announced they're making 12 original Japanese series.
Oh.
On their new sort of side channel thing, Amazon Japan.
Okay.
But they say they're aiming at the Japanese market, but they are going to be available to all worldwide customers. Going to include... See, I don't know what they mean. The article says a spin-off of the series Masked Rider.
Yeah. So, Kamen Rider, yeah?
Yeah, but I don't know if they mean... I would assume they mean Kamen Rider's, like, the original Japanese series. Apparently they did the weird Power Rangers thing, where, like, they made an American version, where, like, they split in random, like, footage of some American guy with the old Japanese footage to make a completely different thing.
I mean, when I was little, I used to watch something. It was something like that. I think it was on roughly at the same time. But
God, that was loads. It was like Power Rangers, Masked Rider, Beetleborgs. That was my favourite. And VR Troopers.
Yeah. I remember VR Troopers.
Anyway, then other series is what we're going to have is a historical time travel drama called Magi, which tells the story of four people who visited the Vatican decades ago and returned to find Christianity banned in Japan.
Yeah.
And a manga-animated teen rom-com called Baby Steps.
Which is a tennis series, which is actually surprisingly good when it comes to the technical side of tennis. I found a couple of others that are going to be on Amazon Prime.
All right.
Yeah. In the same block, there's a manga series adaptation called Businessmen vs. Aliens.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued.
And there's a live-action adaptation of the ever-popular Ultraman series.
Oh, he's the guy who's like a spandex robot, isn't he?
Yeah, the giant one. Basically, he starts off small and then grows mighty big. And there was a rumor one time of having Ultraman versus Godzilla.
I'm happy to watch anything involving Godzilla.
Yep, I know you are.
Are they just running out of ideas now?
Well, no, this is Amazon Japan, so they're trying to cater to the Japanese market. And stuff like Masked Rider, Kamen Rider, Ultraman, those sorts of things are popular in Japan. And weirdly enough, I mentioned this before, we don't really do much in the way of sports dramas on TV in the UK. You get some from America, like Ballers and stuff like that. I still think that's a hilarious name for a series, but, you know. Sorry, Dwayne, it is. It's hilarious. Because Dwayne Johnson stars in it.
I mean, before, I think you used to get quite a few, like, football-based dramas, didn't
we
you?
We had Dream Team and, you know, and The Manageress.
I think stuff like that just kind of died
fell by the wayside.
Death. Yeah.
But over in Japan, there's a big market for live-action, or just, like, from manga to anime to live-action, there's a big market for dramas and romantic comedies, and even some comedies that are focused or set around a particular sport. And Baby Steps is just the latest example of that.
But anyway, I thought it's interesting because you always said that kind of stuff like Netflix needs to do more stuff like this, kind of bringing Japanese entertainment to a wider audience.
Yep.
So it's really interesting to see them not just doing that, but also making their own original content.
It's not Netflix, so it's Amazon, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean Amazon.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Instead of Netflix. Yeah. It's weird because I thought that's an avenue that Netflix would have gone down. I thought that they would have actually taken the first step there. But Amazon taking the first step is surprising.
Is this Amazon, though? Amazon Prime is worldwide, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's set of Netflix do have local Netflix content. So I'd take it Amazon are trying to focus on building that in because won't Netflix have Japanese things, for example, in Netflix Japan? Awesome.
Yeah, but I think it's more interesting what Amazon's doing here, making it for everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's not just for... there's people outside of Japan who watch a lot of Japanese dramas, or J-dramas, and they also watch Korean dramas as well. And there's a growing number of people outside of Japan and Korea who watch those things. It's a growing market, and Amazon is doing the right thing, tapping into it. Getting in early like this, they're guaranteed to get people subscribing to Amazon Prime.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I think Netflix does actually have some Japanese stuff. I'm pretty sure I've seen some like Japanese shows on our Netflix, but they don't really seem to do much to promote them.
No, they don't. And even though they are on Netflix, the titles that they've got aren't really that new. Amazon are basically coming with totally new stuff that hasn't even aired in Japan yet. And when it airs in Japan, it'll air everywhere else because it's on Amazon Prime. Which means a lot more people are going to go for this sort of thing because they can be part of the conversation when it comes to the online forums and things like that. They can go talk about it afterwards and they can talk with people from Japan and Korea and America and various other places about the episode that they've just seen.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely going to be interesting to see how this plays out.
Yeah, they seem to be promoting this quite the way you've mentioned it, like promoting it as a thing. And obviously, if you watch something, it's Amazon. You'll go, oh, you've just watched it. Now buy the merchandise with discount if you're on Amazon Prime, you know. So there's that as well.
People will as well. Mm. People will definitely buy it. Anyway, any other news?
Yes, we have one from the ever so present over the last few months, Top Gear.
Indeed.
So what has Top Gear done now?
This is...
The new episode was out, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. It's back. It's a horrific shambling golem of a thing.
I managed to avoid it using my Matrix-like powers.
powers of not switching to BBC Two.
Yeah, that wasn't just me looking like I was in some kind of 90s rave.
Basically.
See, I was thinking more like low-budget 60s space scene.
That too. Difficult to tell the difference sometimes. I saw
glow sticks is the difference.
No, I saw a lot of helmets while I was during the 90s.
Oh, dear, Rob.
Yes. Anyway, Andy, Top Gear.
Disturbing image. Top Gear was on Sunday at 8 p.m.
Okay.
Started last Sunday. Chris Evans is totally thrilled with new Top Gear, despite show being slammed as Flop Gear by viewers.
Okay, why did the slam as Flop Gear?
Well, it was trending as Flop Gear because it was, to the majority of viewers, as a letdown.
Why?
I think the majority of viewers were expecting something different, something more of a reboot than a continuation of the same show with a new cast. And watching it, it's an open view. Thinking, oh, this might be something fresh, might be something new, new start. But it was basically Chris Evans and Matt LeBlanc trying to do the exact same thing Jeremy Clarkson, Richard Hammond and James May did.
Yeah.
And that was included the main plot line where he had the main challenge, the reviews, and trying to replicate the banter and the tone that they had. And it didn't really go well.
It's difficult to capture that banter when you have two people who really don't know each other.
Yeah, yeah. Cause
Chris Evans and Matt LeBlanc.
The old cast, they built that banter up over decades.
And they kind of knew each other before then anyway. But Matt LeBlanc and what's his name? Chris Evans.
Mm.
They don't know each other that well.
Yeah, you can tell that they're just thrown together. I mean, it did. I mean, the majority of the show, the main, I class it as the main show, the challenge, was Matt LeBlanc and Chris Evans in, I forgot what the name of the car is, three-wheeled van. One after they used in Only Fools and Horses.
The Reliant Robin.
Reliant something, but
yeah.
Oh, the one after the Robin. Yeah, I don't know.
But the Spotify'd them. It was like a UK versus US spray paint and thing, like paint job, no roof. They're going from London to Blackpool on a road trip, and purposely they gave Matt LeBlanc the dodgy car, like what they would give Richard Hammond or James May, and they gave Chris Evans the one that top of the range type of thing. And it was the banter between them wasn't there, but was consisted of Matt LeBlanc basically reminding everybody that he's from the US, that he's American, pronouncing the names wrong. It's some place called Birmingham.
Yeah,
sounds some like place called Blackpool.
So you know how all the old ones like had a thing where like Jeremy Clarkson was the dumb one.
Yeah,
James May was the slow one. Hammond was the Hammondy one.
Carrot.
Sounds like they've tried to like.
Matt LeBlanc is the American one.
They've like honed on you're American. We have to make it a point that you're American in every scene so that you have a thing.
Well, it just goes to show that there's two problems with Top Gear right now. Number one is Matt LeBlanc, and two is, unfortunately, Matt LeBlanc. But for two different reasons. The first reason is obviously, as we've said, him and Chris Evans don't know each other. I'm sure it'd be perfectly fine if you picked one or the other and basically said, okay, do you have two mates who you can bring in who know how to work on TV?
It'll be perfectly fine if you picked Matt LeBlanc, because Chris Evans is such an annoying person.
I mean, Matt LeBlanc.
Like, no offense to him. Mm. It's just, I hate the sight of his face and the sound of his voice.
I'm sorry, but how many people wouldn't automatically tune into Top Gear if you suddenly had Matt LeBlanc, Dave Schwimmer, and Matthew Perry?
Best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He worked with them for how long? Yeah. For 10 years?
The thing is, as well, though, you've got, Matt LeBlanc is a good, he suits the show.
Yeah.
He knows his reviews. He knows...
But that's what I'm saying. He's worked with Dave Schwimmer and Matthew Perry for 10 years. And then, you know, the crowd would go nuts to have them. They'd have that banter. They know how to do comedy because they did Friends for 10 years.
Wouldn't agree with that point. I think it's a fine difference between...
Scripted comedy, being able to
act in a comedy series and being able to be funny... spontaneously like that.
Yeah, you're right. There is it's not a fine difference. There's a big difference, but...
I don't know why I said fine. Yeah. That's the wrong word
to use. Thing is,
this is why I didn't pass my shorthand exam, Rob.
Yeah, the thing is, if you look at the relationship that the three of them had while they were doing Friends, there was a lot of off-camera humour between the three of them as well. So they have that kind of banter already. You know, they have that working relationship. They respect each other enough to get on, but they're not averse to pulling pranks on each other as well.
Well, I mean, like, our whole ethos is that if, like, you put three people together who know each other and have fun with each other, you're going to have a good show.
In general, you'd have a better show than having two total strangers do it and trying to expect them to have that banter. Because at the end of the day, Chris Evans doesn't know how far he can push things with Matt LeBlanc, and Matt LeBlanc doesn't know how far he can push things with Chris Evans. It's you remember when Chris Evans was doing that breakfast show on Channel 4?
Yeah.
And he was doing it for a while with Denise Van Outen. And they had a really good relationship built up, but then he left and What's-His-Face came in. And for the first few shows, after they got What's-His-Face to replace Chris Evans... You know, there was a little bit of shakiness, and you could see it.
Yeah, because, like, they need to get used to each other. Yeah.
I think maybe with Top Gear, it's getting a bit of unfair criticism. They might need a couple of shows just to settle in and get used to each other, get used to working together properly.
I think they need it as well. They need to go in a slightly different direction with it. I think that would have...
Yeah, especially to factor in that lack of, like, inbuilt banter.
Because they are now in direct competition, although it's not TV, with the new... The Grand Tour, that starts, I think it's the end of August time.
Yeah.
Well, heck, it's just, they're in direct competition with old Top Gear.
Yeah.
They're always going to, like, compare it to that if they stick to the same formula.
But it could get positive. Mm. Could get better.
Well, the thing is,
it might not.
When you've hit the bottom of the barrel, the only way is up, you know? And that's literally it. They don't really have much of a choice. It's too much of a money spinner for the BBC. They have to make it work. They have to find a way to make it work. Because the other problem with Matt LeBlanc is simply that he's American. And
yeah, and a lot of people are going to react badly to him being the face of a British motor show.
Exactly. I do think it would have been better if they had, who was it who I'm always picking?
Jody Kidd.
I do think it would have been, Chris Evans and Jody Kidd would have got on fine. And if they got Cal Fogarty and actually introduced motorbikes as a thing on Top Gear, because a lot of people...
That was the thing with Richard Hammond though, wasn't it? Motorbikes.
Not really.
Where
they didn't really
like them, and nobody else did, or something.
He liked them,
like,
and nobody else did. But the thing is, he wasn't really an expert on motorbikes. He couldn't really talk about them properly. But there's some amazing bikes out there, and if you got Foggy involved, then you'd have the three of them. And Foggy's not Foggy's pretty funny as well, you know. And he's former world champion, so he's got the credibility. He knows his stuff, and you've got three British people who actually know what they're talking about and who could probably get on well together.
I mean, they do have a second show now as well with Top Gear, where they have two new hosts.
Yeah.
But it's only on BBC Three, so you have to actually log into your account on BBC Three to watch it.
Yeah. I just think those two things, you know, with the introduction, if you added Cal Fogarty, so it's adding motorbikes into the mix, that's a big change from what happened in the old Top Gear. And then you have Jodie Kidd, who is your first female presenter of Top Gear. Mm. Those two things would have been big enough changes, so you wouldn't need to do much to the rest of it.
And that opinion is completely unbiased by your obvious massive crush on Jodie Kidd.
No. No.
You want her to be your waifu, don't you?
No. I just want to have tea with her.
No. I've had enough shows of you accusing me of wanting, like, various people to be my waifu, which I do. Oh, my God, Tatia. I'm just lying. Call me, please. What was I talking about again?
Tatiana Maslany.
Oh, yeah. you guys carry on with your show. I'm done.
On that note, we'll take a break.
Hello, and I'm Lewis from Keyframe, the geek show's coolest and most composed anime podcast. Just like an anime protagonist. No, we're crazy as heck, but watch us anyway. You'll like it. Trust me. That first bit was a lie.
And welcome back to On The Box. Now we are going to be talking about what we've been watching. So guys, what have you been watching?
Well, I've definitely been watching something this week.
Have you?
Unlike last year. But I've been watching Very British Problems. Before I start, has anybody been watching Very British Problems?
Yes,
I have seen a few episodes of Very British Problems, and the problem I have with Very British Problems was that it lied to me.
It lied to you?
Yes. When they said Very British Problems, I was expecting a show about queuing, you know.
That's series three.
You know, that sort of thing.
Based off of the thing from Twitter?
This is based off a Twitter account of the same name, which itself is plagiarised from a subreddit account, British Problems. But the TV show is still good.
Okay.
Basically, it's comedians and, for example, Jack Whitehall. Danny Dyer is on there. He's not a comedian, but...
Whitehall really a comedian?
There's quite a few on there. And they talk about each week they've got a topic range. It could be anything. But, for example, the last one was holidays, what problems do you have when you go on holiday? And the best was talking about the airport, how you rushed and things like that. But the best episode I've seen so far was school.
Okay.
Because you have Rich Hall there as well. He always talks about it from the American, even though it's Very British Problems. But
they have
an American there, just to give an American view. But it's the views that they've got, and you can agree with as well. For example, nicknames at school. Everybody's got a nickname. For example, when I was at school, we called Jordan Mutton Beef.
Okay.
Or Beef Teeth. Because one day, he was eating beef crisps. Just one day. And it talked about that.
Sure, that's true. Remember we had a guy in our class who we called Pickle. No one knows why.
But yeah, you might be able to elaborate on that. I don't know if you saw the school one, but it was uniforms as well. What do you do with uniform? For example, your tie. If your school's got a tie, they're all like very short, like this. I've tied it wrong. Oh, hang on, this is knotted. Or someone goes along and just pulls your tie.
That's how you deliberately do it short as a sign of rebellion. Stick it to the man.
No, it was really good to watch because you had people, obviously, that grew up in the 60s as well. So it was how they changed. Like, I forgot who was talking about. I was talking about getting the slipper. Apparently he got hit with a slipper. No, I don't want to turn to Rob just in case he doesn't remember getting hit by a slipper.
I remember getting hit by a sandal.
Oh.
Not a slipper.
Ah, the budget must have went up.
No. I mean, I remember me getting hit by a sandal by my mum for being a naughty boy. She has a talent, that woman, for being able to throw sandals that curve around corners and hit you in the back of the head when you least suspect it. But the slipper was correct.
Anyway, yeah, it's a really good show. I mean, the last one, which I haven't seen yet.
Yeah.
But it's on every Monday, so I have to catch up, was on dating.
Okay.
So that'll be quite funny if Jack Whitehall has something to say. And
Jack Whitehall's on it?
Jack Whitehall's on it, yeah. Although, they must ask they're in the same clothes and in the same room every week, so they must ask all these questions at once. And it's always, for example, it goes to Jack Whitehall and he's like getting something out of his fridge or making some orange juice. Every time, I'm thinking, how much orange juice or how much cereal or... What can you eat and drink?
Yeah, I guess have been the same session. Maybe they have like a continuity guy who makes them always be like in the same clothes.
But yeah, it's a good show. It's definitely a good show. Go along the lines of where I was talking about a few months ago, where they were showing them technology.
Yeah,
and they were talking about that. They were showing kids technology, like the React type of thing. But yeah, it's a really good show. I recommend watching it.
Okay, cool.
Or catching up. It's definitely about reminding you about what you did at school or when you go on your holidays. What troubles did you have? Dating. Is this week's? Well, last week's. I'm not sure what next week's is, but...
I guess that kind of show, it's very easy to do right, isn't it? Just have do you remember this thing?
On the dating episode, I can easily recommend them a book that we've read out on Literary Loitering a few times.
How to Poo on Dates.
Yes. Which is How to Poo on a Date, not How to Poo.
Oh, sorry, How to Poo on a Date. Yeah.
That's a
totally different website. Never mind book.
Oh, dear.
Yes. Anyway, moving on. Do you want to go or do you want me to?
I can go.
Okay.
Okay, bye. Super.
I'll go then.
No, I'll go. So, what I've been watching is Series 3 of Peaky Blinders.
Ooh.
On BBC Two. Yeah, BBC Two, I think. So, it's set in 1920s Birmingham, follows Tommy Shelby, played by Cillian, is that how you pronounce his name?
Cillian Murphy, yeah.
Yeah, Cillian Murphy. Who's been in films, he has.
Yes.
So, he is busy, leader of the gang, the Peaky Blinders, who've got like razor blades in the caps that they used to slash people's mouths. That's where that name comes from. It's kind of their rise to power. At least that was kind of series one and two. Now this series starts basically Tommy Shelby's like basically the richest man in all of Birmingham, but he's basically indebted to the UK government now.
Yeah.
After they saved his life at the end of series two. And has to help them with some big scheme to steal armored trucks for the Russian rebellion.
Okay.
I really like the first two series, but I've not been enjoying this one as much. Feels like it's kind of hit that point that a lot of shows hit, where they reach a point and they just stop having an idea of what they want to do.
Yeah, I've seen it happen to quite a few shows. It's what happened to Lost. It happened to Prison Break. It happened to quite a lot of shows, actually, now that I come to think about it. Third season Blues, I suppose.
Yeah, because throughout the first two series, it's been very clear Tommy Shelby is a man who is determined to rise to, like, the very top of the criminal underworld.
Yeah.
And will do anything it takes to get there. And then he got there.
Yeah.
And, like, now he's just there.
Is that all they did with it? Just he's there. Lonely at the top, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. But, like, it's weird because I feel like there's a lot, like, to play around with there.
There is. Because, I mean, do you remember The Sopranos?
Yeah, exactly. You can do this whole it's lonely at the top and everyone's always, like, trying to stab you in the back type thing.
Yeah, because Tony Soprano, once he made it to the top, he had to fight to stay there. And that's something that they could have done with Peaky Blinders. Make it so that he has to fight every day as a struggle.
Yeah, like, that's, to be honest, that's what I've assumed this series was going to be going into it.
Yeah.
But it hasn't. Like, I'm worried that maybe part of it might be a reluctance to kind of shake up the status quo. And that is very worrying.
Should never be afraid to shake up the status quo. Guru Martin isn't afraid to kill off characters, and look how much everyone adores exactly. Game of Thrones. Just throwing it out there, you know?
Yeah.
You have to. If you're struggling, shake it up. People are going to watch it. Huh?
Plus, I think another part of the problem might be lack of a decent villain. Because in Series 1 and 2, you had Sam Neill as Chief Inspector Campbell.
Yeah.
It was like this corrupt police officer trying to take them down. And he was great because he was Sam Neill.
Yep.
But he got killed off at the end of Series 2. And, like, this is, you've kind of had this priest guy. Yeah, Father John Hughes. He's played by Paddy Considine, who, to be fair, he's a good actor.
Okay.
But, like, he's not in it that much. Also, what they did, which was really tacky and I don't like, is that they've, just in the last episode, revealed that he likes to do bad things to children.
Okay.
And that just seems really cheap. Oh, we've got a bad guy, he's a priest. He's got to be into this kind of stuff as well. That's just, it doesn't add anything.
Yeah, I think with a villain, you need somebody that is a threat to the main character. Somebody that's above the main character. And as you've said, if they've already gone to the top,
yeah,
and everything else is below
him. I mean,
it.
I guess technically he is above him because, like, he's in the pocket of, like, the UK government.
Mm.
But they don't have, like, a good dynamic. Like, he'll just occasionally show up, be vaguely threatening, and then disappear again. And then Tommy's all, ooh, I'm going to kill that guy, so I is.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a disappointment. Except for last night, they brought back a character from Series 2, Alfie Solomons, who is the leader of the Jewish gang in London.
Okay.
Played by Tom Hardy.
Really?
Yes.
Oh.
And he is amazing.
Wow.
Especially that's... because they...
I forgot Tom Hardy was in this.
Yeah, yeah. It's great because he is, as I said, the leader of a Jewish gang.
Yeah.
And they need to bring him in to replace some jewels that they're getting from the Russians. And obviously around this time, there's, like, stuff with basically Russians persecuting the Jews.
Yeah.
And just Tom Hardy's character just goes out of their way to make the Russians feel as uncomfortable as possible. And it just gets right in their face, and it's so amazing to watch. Because cool. He's a scary man, that Tom Hardy is. He's a big fella.
He is. Well, I watched Bronson.
Yes.
And he's...
My name is Charles Bronson.
Yep. He's just a little bit terrifying.
That was not Tom Hardy's accent in the slightest.
Yeah. No, it wasn't. But he was just a little bit scary in that.
He is.
Or a little bit psychotic in that. More than a little bit, actually.
Yeah. It's in the eyes, which makes it, like...
Yeah.
Tom Hardy has amazing eyes for, like, playing a crazy person.
Yes, he does.
And I think that's the important lesson we can take away from today.
Tom Hardy's eyes.
Yes, Tom Hardy has crazy eyes.
Okay, my turn then?
Yes, your turn.
Right, okay. Now, I was watching the BBC adaptation of A Midsummer Night's Dream, which is part of this whole 400 years since Shakespeare died, because... apparently, we hate Shakespeare, which is why we celebrate his death.
Although, speaking, I do need to. Did you see the Moments of Wonder special with Philomena Kunk?
No, I didn't.
To find it.
I will watch it. Don't worry. I've been meaning to watch it. It's a good thing you remind me. But anyway, back to The Midsummer Night's Dream, which is adapted for TV by Russell T. Davies. And most people know him for Doctor Who. Now, this is actually kind of a controversial adaptation of A Midsummer Night's Dream. There's been a lot of backlash over this, but I personally thought it was wonderful. I thought it was great. I loved every minute of it, right? It's exactly what I wanted from A Midsummer Night's Dream, slightly ethereal. It's basically a comedy in the way that Shakespeare did comedy. You had an all-star cast, just to run through the cast list, right? Titania was played by Maxine Peake. Oberon was Nonso Anozi, who has the best name. Bottom was played by Matt Lucas, and he did really well in that role.
Yeah, I can see him being really good as Bottom.
Theseus was John Hannah, who was amazing.
Oh, love a bit John Hannah.
Yeah. Hippolyta was Elena Matsura, who was really good. Puck was Hiran Abe Sekra, and he was really good as Puck. When he did the monologue at the end, you know, it's brilliant the way he delivered it. Hermia was Prisca Bakare. Kate Kennedy played the role of Helena. Matthew Tennyson played Lysander. Papa Esiedu played Demetrius. Elaine Page played Mistress Quince.
Ooh.
Really good. Elaine Page was amazing as Mistress Quince. Richard Wilson was Starveling. He was really good. Bernie Cribbins played Snout.
Bernie Cribbins was in it.
Yeah, and he played Snout, and he was really good because they did the I've forgotten the name for it. You know, with the song at the end with the hey nonny nonny and
yeah. So,
yeah. And Bernie Cribbins is the one singing it.
Right, I'm sold. I'm gonna have to watch it.
Javon Prince played Snug, Fisayo Akinade played Flute, and Colin McFarlane played Aegeus.
I'm a fan.
Elliot Levy.
I know the name. Who is he?
Google him. You'll know. Anyway, Elliot Levy played Philostrate. Charlotte Blake played Cobweb. Varadu Sethu played Peas Blossom. Tia Benbow-Hart played Moth. Marlene Madenge played Mustard Seed. And that's pretty much it for the cast list.
Then that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's good. I like him.
Yeah. It's a stellar cast. It's a really good cast for a TV adaptation of Shakespeare. And the whole thing was really colourful and really vibrant. Starts off with like a very untypical Shakespeare thing, right? It starts off with John Hannah playing the dictator Theseus, and you have a bunch of kind of pseudo Nazis, and everything is everything, you know, they have red banners with the circle and the black letter inside. You know, so everything has this kind of Nazi overtone to it. And all of these soldiers, they look like kind of, you know, goose-stepping stormtroopers type thing. And then Hippolyta is wheeled in like an outtake from Silence of the Lambs because she's strapped to a chair mask.
I think like I saw this a little bit as I was passing through of her just like with the Lecter mask on.
Yeah. And then all of the lovers walk in as well. And then it just, you know, the magic happens. Russell T. Davies hasn't done much to the dialogue. Most of the dialogue is basically what Shakespeare wrote. He's just tweaked it here and there to bring it into the modern era. But his take on A Midsummer Night's Dream is quite remarkable because it made it interesting to watch, it made it unusual to watch, and it made it exciting to watch. And that I think is wonderful because Shakespeare can be quite boring at times, depending on what you're watching. Love to see Russell T. Davies take a stab at Much Ado About Nothing. Love to see him take a stab at that.
Or maybe Romeo and Juliet, which, according to Philomena Kunk, was the finest romance of the pre-Dirty Dancing era.
Yes.
Or Macbeth, which was set in Scotland for tax reasons.
But anyway, so the story unfolds, everything happens the way we expect it to happen because it's A Midsummer Night's Dream, so I'm not really spoiling anything by telling people what happens, but I'm not going to, because it's Shakespeare, and I really can't be bothered. If you don't know it, then learn. What, it should be taught in schools? Still.
Pretty sure it is, isn't it?
Not the school I went to. I didn't learn Shakespeare in school. I had to learn it for myself.
Yeah, we learned Shakespeare in school.
Learned it at death.
Hey?
We learned it at death.
Nothing like months and months of Macbeth to make you hate it.
Yes. But anyway, moving on from that, there were some changes that were made, right? Number one is the relationship between Hippolyta and Titania.
Yes, this is the thing that...
a lot of people have jumped on.
Yes.
Not just that, there's the whole thing with, Snug, and he falls in love with one of the guards and they're dancing together as well. So two guys dancing together, and then Hippolyta and Titania share a kiss at the end, which apparently is a passionate kiss. Like, really? I didn't see any tongue. Sorry to lower the tone, but because you have a bunch of headlines now across all the papers, and you have on one side, papers like The Guardian saying, "A Midsummer Night's Dream, Russell T Davies makes Shakespeare engaging, fresh and funny." On the other side, you have, "Shakespeare would be turning in his grave, outrage after BBC's PC adaptation of A Midsummer Night's Dream airs, including gay trysts and a lesbian kiss." That's the Mail, in case you were wondering.
Yeah, which, I mean, to be fair, Midsummer Night's Dream is a play about relationships, isn't it?
Yes.
And, like, we recognise a lot more types of relationship than we did in Shakespeare's day.
Exactly.
So, yeah, so it's good to, like, include all.
I applaud BBC and Russell T Davies for actually taking that step and saying, look, this is the modern era. If Shakespeare was alive now, he would have done something like this. And I applaud the fact that they did it. I don't applaud the fact that you have prudes taken to Twitter to leave comments like this. At BBC, I am seriously shocked at your interpretation of hashtag Midsummer Night's Dream, hashtag Shakespeare would be turning in his grave, hashtag not happy, hashtag insult.
Well, what a damning insult.
And another one, oh dear me, BBC, the Midsummer Night's Dream adaptation by Russell T Davies was awful. What did you just do to Shakespeare? As if they've dug him up and done something to him. Shakespeare may turn in his grave at this version. Then emoticon and then hashtag Midsummer Night's Dream. I'm sure there's a lot more hashtags for Midsummer Night's Dream, but most of them, I think, were quite positive. Most people were generally quite happy with the adaptation.
Yeah, because, I mean, plus you got to remember, a lot of the people who complain are the kind of people who just, oh no, you've changed it, like, changed it in any way, shape, or form.
I don't like change.
Yes. Everything must be exactly the same forever.
And
must never
and
update
ever.
Anything.
Yep.
That's why my computer still runs on the original Windows. But no, that's why I use an abacus.
No, no.
The Charles Babbage internal computing engine.
Punch cards, man. Punch cards. There's your long-term storage. You have a hole punch that you use to patiently punch holes into cards. That's what you spend your evenings doing, isn't it?
It is. What's refusing my tuberculosis vaccinations?
Or carving onto rock.
Yes.
Carving your runes onto rock.
Yes, runes, because we don't need the modern-day English language nonsense.
It's not like they've ruined the play by changing it.
No, they haven't.
It's not like, for example, they've brought Romeo and Juliet into the 21st century and they're communicating over Facebook, and then all of a sudden something bad happens, so they block.
What, the internet connection goes down? Oh no, the internet connection's gone down. I can't speak to Romeo. I must kill myself.
You're banished from...
Romeo is toad's dead, hashtag gutted.
We've banned your Facebook account instead of banished. You know.
See, in the modern era, maybe that's why Romeo killed himself. Not because of Juliet, but because his Facebook account...
Major lag.
No, his Facebook account got hacked. And someone framed him big time.
And he couldn't post selfies anymore.
Hashtag no filter.
Except for one last sweet pre-death selfie.
Yep. That would be the Romeo and Juliet for the modern era.
So that I could actually see someone making that, though.
But, I mean, how would they do, like, the duels? Would that be, like, just their version of lip sync battle?
Yes.
Because that would be amazing.
The game of Street Fighter, Rob.
No, because...
Major lag issues.
Yeah, true. Street Fighter. But where would they find, like, the sword and the rapier? Or Soul Calibur? It'd be Soul Calibur, yeah. Wouldn't it? Immediately it'd be Soul Calibur.
You say, like, it would be any dumber than Baz Luhrmann's "Hand me my long sword, shotgun with long sword written on it."
Yep. See, I like that. I'm
pulling out their rapier brand pistols.
Yeah, sword 9mm, yes. Rapier 9mm. See, if they basically pulled out those pistols and then they started an actual gun battle where it was like Equilibrium's gun kata, that would have been amazing. I would say Baz Luhrmann then had actually hit the nail on the head. And if he was using the sword shotgun as if it was an actual sword, so he's doing actual sword movements, but every time he landed a hit, he pulled the trigger and blew them away.
Basically, if everyone had gun swords.
Yeah, basically. Because then it'd work.
I think all of Shakespeare's plays would be improved by gun kata and gun swords.
Yes. Yes, they would. Macbeth would be a lot shorter.
Bubble, bubble, tall intro, bang. Weird, wonder what that was all about.
Yeah. Don't eat the soup. So yeah, that was A Midsummer Night's Dream. And we are unfortunately at the end of the show, so we're going to leave you for another week there.
Yes, we hope you've enjoyed the show. If you have, maybe think about checking out our GoFundMe page. Either donate some money or just share it around with your friends, because we do rely on the support of our lovely listeners. And if you feel like visiting our website, you can find us on geekshow.co.uk. We have the Geek Shop, where we have lots of lovely stuff that you can buy. You can find our shows on the site, we're on YouTube, we're on iTunes, we're on Mixcloud. We might be other places. We tend to like get everywhere like damp. That's the Geek Show. We are the damp of the internet.
I'll have you know I'm mildew, not damp.
And of course you can get in contact at studio@geekshow.co.uk. One day, Rob, one day I'll get the email address right.
I've got a bet on that, actually.
Oh, just you. I'm going to make you lose that. I'm not invested, so I'm not going to win the bet, but I don't care, as long as you lose.
It's not a bet, it's a pool.
Sweepstake, I think you'll find. Sweepstake.
Pool. I go away for a couple of weeks and you guys become degenerate gamblers.
I didn't.
Pool's the bet.
Yes. Yes, it is.
You don't even have a dead sweepstake.
Anyway, that's it. That's the end of the show. I hope you've all enjoyed listening, and thanks for tuning in.